From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Congress has taken several big votes that could create significant changes for California. Last week, Republicans in the House narrowly passed a budget bill supported by President Donald Trump, which includes major cuts to safety net programs like Medicaid, also known as Medi-Cal here, and could lead to millions of people in the Golden State losing health care coverage. And on Thursday, the Senate also voted to block California's zero-emission vehicle mandate, which would phase out gas-powered vehicles and has been a key part of the state's efforts to combat air pollution and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Both of these actions have already drawn opposition and lawsuits from California leaders and are setting the ground for more fights down the road. And on top of all of that, at the state capitol, as lawmakers work to close a $12 billion budget shortfall with weeks to go before the deadline, lawmakers voted to kill or block hundreds of bills just before the Memorial Day weekend. Joining us now to get us up to speed on these developments is Dustin Gardner, co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Welcome back, Dustin.
Hey, Vicky. Great to be with you.
Well, let's talk about what President Trump has coined, the big, beautiful budget bill, which passed through the House of Representatives last week. Can you break down how that might impact California?
Yeah, so the biggest impacts in California would be to safety net programs like Medicaid and SNAP, which is the federal food stamp program. And the estimates are around roughly 3.5 million Californians could potentially lose their health care coverage under Medicaid. And this is because of largely because of work requirements that the bill would put on that program, you know, generally requiring people that are receiving the benefit to be working a minimum amount of hours per month. And so it's really just a pretty hefty haircut to a program that a lot of Californians especially depend upon.
How does this compound the cuts that Governor Newsom would like to make to Medi-Cal to close a projected $12 billion deficit, the ones that he laid out during his May revise?
Yeah, so these are a separate set of cuts, but it would be, you know, a much more significant haircut to the program. The governor has talked about, you know, rolling back coverage for undocumented Californians that are not in the program yet and requiring others to start making a co-payment. The changes we're talking about at the federal level, this would entirely remove people from the program that are not meeting certain work requirements. So it's just a much broader, more sweeping set of changes. And while Newsom wants to limit the amount of undocumented residents that are receiving Medi-Cal, the state's version of Medicaid, the Trump administration supported bill moving through Congress would penalize the state for offering any coverage to undocumented immigrants. Hmm.
And what we're talking about, the federal level, happened in the House. So where does this budget bill stand now? Where does it go?
Yeah, so it just got through the House by one vote, 215 votes, and you know, the narrowest of margins, and now it goes to the Senate. And Republicans have promised some sweeping changes to it in the Senate. You know, some more moderate Republicans, including Republicans that represent swing districts in California. They promised to roll back some of the more aggressive cuts and make sure that, you know, people like pregnant mothers or senior citizens are not losing their Medicaid coverage, and that children, you know, aren't losing food stamps. They've made some of those big promises, but we'll see what happens in the Senate. And already we're seeing Democrats really going after some of the state's most vulnerable House Republicans. We're talking, you know, members like David Valadao in the Central Valley, or Young Kim in Orange County, or Ken Calvert in the Inland Empire. They all voted for the bill, and they're being pretty heavily targeted by Democrats who say that despite their promises, you know, they voted for something that does have these very steep cuts.
How could this impact their race for the midterms?
Yes, I mean, it's often said that the road to the majority in the House goes through California, as you know, as well as you could argue New York and a couple of other states that have a lot of swing districts. But those three seats I mentioned, with Valadao, Kim, and Calvert, Those three could be very consequential in these next midterms. And I did a long interview on Friday with former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who, even though she's no longer in leadership, she's very much in the center of this fight around defending Medicaid and defending federal health care programs. And her political operation is already leading multiple phone banks a week, targeting voters in those swing districts, trying to kind of spread information about what this bill would do to Medicaid. I think Democrats are trying to get on this issue very early and trying to shape public sentiment for the midterms.
I mean, specifically looking at Representative Valadao, whose district is in the Central Valley, I think around 64% of constituents are enrolled in Medicaid. How does he defend his vote to pass this bill?
Yeah, and that is something that Nancy Pelosi has flagged often, is that, you know, he has almost 500,000 constituents on Medicaid, and, you know, his district is less than 800,000 people. That's a huge, huge portion. It's one of the highest portions of Medicaid recipients in any district in the country. But Valadao, as I said earlier, he's one of the swing lawmakers who's saying that they want to see changes made in the Senate to protect the most vulnerable populations. And in addition to doing that, he said the bill more broadly is designed at targeting waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicaid and food stamp programs. So that has been his primary defense, saying that the most vulnerable won't be hurt once those changes are made in the Senate. And Democrats, meanwhile, are saying that, you know, Republicans just haven't provided evidence to show that there is widespread malfeasance and waste or fraud in these programs.
OK, so this could look very different when and if it crosses that finish line. Let's move over to the Senate, because there was a big vote that happened last week on Thursday. It voted to block California's zero emission vehicle rules, which would have phased out gas powered cars by 2035 in about a decade. So how is that shaping California's climate goals?
Yeah, so the state, Governor Newsom and Attorney General Rob Bonta, you know, right out of the gate, they had a lawsuit prepared to challenge this. And they think they have pretty strong legal grounds to target this action by the Senate, because the Senate did something unusual. They used not frequently used a law called the Congressional Review Act, which gives the Congress the authority to review certain administrative rules set by the federal executive branch. And even the Senate parliamentarian suggested that it was outside of their purview to use that law to challenge California's exemption under the Federal Clean Air Act to set its own emission standards. That's all a very wonky way of saying that California doesn't think the Senate has the authority to revoke that waiver that it has had for decades to set stronger emission standards. So I think this will be playing out in the court for some time. And in the meantime, Governor Newsom has, you know, has described the state as moving forward on its program to phase out gas-powered cars and move to electric or hydrogen cars. And he's urging automakers to voluntarily participate and to, you know, not to slide back from the changes that have been happening in the auto market. You know, we've seen pretty high market shares in California. Some quarters, it's up to 26% of new vehicles are already electric cars. And so I think the governor is projecting confidence, at least outwardly projecting confidence, that market transition is going to continue at a significant pace.
So this lawsuit is one of upwards of two dozen that have been filed by California against the Trump administration in just months into this new administration. You were just in court earlier this morning. Which ones have bubbled up to the top for you?
Well, I was just in court this morning on the tariffs lawsuit. This is the case that Bonta and Newsom filed, basically challenging Trump's authority to use emergency powers and unilaterally set tariffs without going through Congress. That there's a big jurisdiction debate in that case about whether it belongs in a D.C. court or whether it can go through the Ninth Circuit out here. That one's still bubbling. But overall, 23 lawsuits, almost two dozen. And they're all, you know, all over the map. You know, we mentioned EVs, tariffs. It deals with things like undocumented immigrants and birthright citizenship. It's just this incredible span of lawsuits. And we're seeing typically two or three every week, at least two a week, I would say, on average. And, it's gotten hard for a lot of people to keep track. keep track of these lawsuits. And it's even outpacing the pace of lawsuits during the first Trump presidency already, despite, state leaders suggesting earlier in the year that they were going to try to, have a more copacetic tone with Trump the second time around. That just clearly hasn't been the case with that pace of litigation so far.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Politico's Dustin Gardner about the latest in California politics. Okay, so let's move now to the state capitals. So just before the three-day weekend in honor of Memorial Day, the legislature here rejected hundreds of bills in what's called the suspense file. Can you just explain this process starting off?
Yeah, so this is basically the bottleneck where any bill with a significant price tag, with a significant fiscal ask, has to go through either the Appropriations Committee in the Senate or the Assembly to start. And those committees, rather than, sort of debating each of these bills one by one, they put them all through a bottleneck at the same time, known as the suspense file. And that's the kind of the insider term that people at the Capitol use. And the committee will, in one day, announce its the decisions on the fate of all those bills. And, they'll either shelve the bills, some of them turn into two-year bills and carry over to next year. Some are just gutted and amended into something entirely different. So it's this incredible bottleneck that is kind of an opaque process. Some of the bills are debated earlier in the process before they go through this suspense bottleneck, but often, the decisions for why bills are amended in a certain way there or why they're killed, it's not explained. It's a very, very unusual process in Sacramento that is mostly just familiar to Capitol insiders.
So what percentage of these bills do they make up the overall bills that are making its way through the legislature this session? Is it a good chunk that were in the suspense file?
Yeah, I mean, because we're talking about any bill with a fiscal ask, significant fiscal ask, it's hundreds. It's typically, I would say, about 300 or so in the Assembly and maybe a little bit less in the Senate because there are fewer members in the Senate. And of those, I would say we had about 35% of the bills get held in the Assembly, and we had 29% get held in the Senate. So it's hundreds of fiscal bills, and a third or more aren't making it through, which I think is indicative of just kind of the tight financial times we're in right now, especially as the state faces a $12 billion budget deficit. The appropriations chairs of those committees, we had, Buffy Wicks in the Assembly and Anna Caballero in the Senate, and they both gave remarks before this suspense hearing saying that their decisions reflected that reality, that the state has to tighten its belt and that $12 billion budget deficit is just making lawmakers make tougher calls to not advance a lot of bills that might have gotten more traction in past years.
Any idea how much these cuts will save?
So they don't keep a running tally of the bills that are killed in the Appropriations Committee. And so we won't know the overall budget picture of what the Senate or the Assembly is proposing until each caucus puts out their own budget plan in the coming weeks. Governor Newsom put out his May revised budget a couple of weeks ago, and now we're in this kind of waiting pattern for the Assembly and the Senate to come back with their own budget proposals. And that all comes as, of course, the administration and legislative leadership are having their own behind the scenes, behind closed doors budget negotiations.
In the last minute or so that we have, I do want to focus just quickly on the midterms. We usually get a temperature check from you because things update pretty quickly. So Dr. Sure. Shirley Weber, Secretary of State, announced she is running for re-election. Did that come as a surprise to you?
I don't think it came as any surprise. There's so much competition for statewide seats in 2026. Even, seats like state treasurer have a pretty competitive field. So I wasn't surprised. I think if she was thinking about retiring, we would have seen a lot of people coming out of the woodwork. But that said, she hasn't been the most visible Secretary of State. And despite all the criticism around the time that it takes to count ballots in California, she hasn't been very vocal in the legislature advocating for some of the changes that some lawmakers want to speed up ballot counting in the state.
Yeah, and that is a departure. I mean, she is a former state lawmaker and was pretty vocal in that role.
Yeah, exactly. It is interesting contrast. I myself and other reporters have been talking about that. Of, you know, she was very out there as a state assembly member and championed several landmark laws dealing with reparations or police use of force. But as Secretary of State, she really has not been very out there. Of course, she's defended, you know, some of the reasons why it takes the state longer to count ballots than a lot of the rest of the country. And some of that, a lot of that has to do with, you know, our period for counting mail-in ballots. But she hasn't been again out there at the front of some of the fights in the legislature about trying to clean that up and make the process a little more transparent.
Speaking of crowded races, any updates on the governor's race?
So we still don't know if Kamala Harris is going to run for governor in 2026. She has left the door open until the late summer. But in the meantime, you know, her not, while she's waiting to make a decision, Republicans that are running for governor seem very intrigued by the idea of having her as a target. You know, we're talking about Republican pundit Steve Hilton, a former Fox News personality, or Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco. They've all been cheering this idea, as my colleague Jeremy B. White reported over the weekend. These Republicans want her in there because they see her as you know, a personality that can really help them fundraise and provide a, you know, pretty strong contrast. She's kind of just given her notoriety and name ID, having just ran for president. She's the type of candidate that Republicans could get a lot of traction just running against and probably help them raise a lot more money.
Yeah, and the buzz around that is that she would make a decision by the end of summer.
Yes, yeah, end of summer. And she hasn't backtracked off that. She gave a speech in San Francisco about 2 weeks ago at an event for women in politics. And, you know, she it was kind of her big coming back to the national stage since she lost the election. And she took a lot of swipes at Trump, but her speech sounded like a lot more like a presidential speech. And she made gave no indication that she's changed her timeline at all. So we're still looking at kind of that late summer timeframe for her to make a decision.
Dustin, as always, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Up next, we're going to stick with the state capitol. State lawmakers have introduced more than 2,000 bills this year, and many of them draw testimony from activists, lobbyists, and the general public. But securing that time to talk is not guaranteed. We'll look at the challenges everyday Californians face when weighing in on legislation. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.